Breaking major stories on covert military operations, environment and health, and a former member of the U.S. Navy during and immediately after Desert Storm. William Thomas served for 5 months as a member of a three-man environmental emergency response team in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. His book, Bringing the War Home, is highly acclaimed by Gulf War veterans for documenting the causes of Gulf War illness and exposing the secret bio-war in the Gulf. But William Thomas is best known to you for his continuing investigations into chemtrails. Now 8 years on the chemtrail, his latest findings have been updated in his most recent edition of Chemtrails Confirmed. When we return, we're going to talk with William Thomas about chemtrails. And then later on in the program, I shall introduce and tell you about another exclusive story that he is going to announce right here on Coast to Coast AM. I assure you, this is going to be a fascinating night tonight. William Thomas is an award-winning investigative journalist specializing in health, the environment, and military affairs, honing his craft on the streets of Milwaukee, Chicago, and Woodstock. During the 60s, William Thomas reported for the Environmental News Service while serving as a member of a three-man environmental emergency response team during and immediately following the Gulf War. Now, he later broke the chemtrail story worldwide with ENS. William Thomas and his award-winning writing and photography have appeared in more than 50 publications in 8 countries with translations into French, Dutch, Japanese. He's got an award-winning video documentary called The Eco War. It won the 1991 U.S. Environmental Festival Award for the Best Documentary Short. We're going to talk this half hour about updates on the chemtrail story. And then later on, we are going to get in with William and an anonymous guest, which we'll tell you about in just a moment. William, welcome back to Coast. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much. A real pleasure to be back with you, George, and our listeners in an historic show tonight.
Oh, man, you've been doing a lot of work, indeed. Updates, though, updates on crop circles, and I mean the chemtrails. What's going on there?
I was just down in Victoria, the capital of British Columbia, Canada, last Friday to give a talk. I suppose, George, in my honor, the city was hammered. I have been in this business for 8 years now on the chemtrail, as you mentioned, and I have never, repeat, never seen a chemtrailing of any city to that extent. They wallpapered the city all day into the night. The talk was easy. I just had to tell people, look out the window and tell me what you see. At the same time, I got reports that Portland, Oregon, which we regularly hear from, was again just covered with chemtrails. So 8 years on, this is not letting up.
In some regions throughout the country as well, people are reporting to us, William, that they wake up in the morning, the skies are blue, and by mid-afternoon, they can't see the sky anymore. It's all clouded up with these checkerboard chemtrails all over the place.
That's right, and it's starting to really flummox meteorologists, professional weather people. I was told just yesterday, have been looking out with Doppler radar from both coasts of the United States, watching major weather systems approaching and then large quadrants dissolving, similar to the hurricane tracks we've been seeing in the Caribbean. They come on for a couple of hours, I'm told, dissolve or at least disappear completely off radar, do not reflect radar for an hour, and then reappear. I cannot tell you this is chemtrails. The weather people call it a military operation, but this is happening on average, I'm told, twice a week off the coast of the United States.
I had a guest on a couple weeks ago, and we were talking briefly, William, about chemtrails. It is his theory that we're getting doused with Prozac in chemicals and drugs like that sprinkled in the atmosphere. Is he, like, over the edge on this, or is this a possibility?
With respect, I would say that this is impossible simply because there's not enough Prozac on the planet. Most of it's selling through pharmacies anyway. We don't need to spread it through the air. Half of the country is on Prozac tonight or more. That's actually a pretty accurate statistic. So negative. We're not seeing the spreading of medications, antibiotics, Prozac through the chemtrails. These aircraft, some of them hold 130,000 gallons apiece. We're seeing formations of 8 up to 30 airplanes at a time. There's not enough Prozac on the planet to fill a single airplane.
Today we had a report that the Chinese made it rain and made it rain in buckets in Beijing using silver iodide into the atmosphere. Could that also be another possibility, weather manipulation?
It is a possibility. In fact, the air traffic controllers across the United States have been told for years, as they vector commercial aircraft in under these chemtrails, which show up as a haze on their scopes, they've been told this is first weather modification, then they were told, no, this is actually climate modification. However, we can emphasize this is not cloud seeding, which is taking place now in some 48 states under license in Canada. As you mentioned, China, around the world, we have major corporations exporting this silver iodide technology. The idea here is to take moisture in the air, clump it around a catalyst such as silver iodide till it becomes so heavy it falls as rain, filling reservoirs, putting snow on ski slopes, things like that. This is chemtrails are not cloud seeding. They are cloud-forming chemicals that make what the Air Force calls aerial obscuration or artificial cloud decks.
Sometimes in the morning, at least in St. Louis, I would see what looked like massive spider webs all over bushes and shrubs, up in trees. And so I'm saying, well, you know, spiders have been working their heads off at night. But I'm also beginning to think, William, what are the possibilities that whatever this stuff is, fiber, is coming from the planes?
I think you're right on target with that. In my book that you mentioned, Chemtrails Confirmed, I describe an incident similar to what you're describing at the Denver airport, and a police officer's uniform was literally covered with this stuff. They told him the same story. Oh, those are overactive spiders. Maybe they need some Prozac or something. But it was December. There were no spiders. I called Bernard Eastland at his home in Texas and asked him about his invention called HARP, working away up there in Alaska. And later, I called him back, and I said, what about these fibers? Could these be some kind of polymer being sprayed into the air for this HARP transmitter to bounce its signal off of? And he says, well, absolutely, that could be the case. We can fine-tune the polymers you're mentioning, which don't dissolve, by the way, like spider webs in your hand. We can fine-tune them to the HARP frequencies and bounce HARP signals all over the United States and very possibly beyond. So we on the chemtrails investigation, believe that these polymers, and we've tried to lab test them without much result, these are polymers, and we think that they are involved with the HARP experiments in Alaska.
Give me some possibilities now, William. Let's say three of your top theories on chemtrails, with maybe the last one being what you think they may be.
Oh, you know what? I can't bite on that. After 8 years, George, with respect, I don't have theories. At this point, I am going with the climate modification and, leading off your question, inadvertent, underline inadvertent, biological warfare, in effect, it is my theory, and this so-called theory, this speculation, was seconded without prompting by one of the scientists working on the chemtrails project at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base when he was interviewed by a friend of mine, award-winning journalist Bob Fitzrakis, for Columbus Alive magazine, and expressed concern that chemtrails were bringing down from the upper atmosphere viruses, bacteria, and fungi that scientists have recently learned have been living and breeding up there for apparently millennia, being bombarded by UV, as you can appreciate, mm-hmm. and mutating so that our immune systems would not recognize these pathogens. And the scientist was concerned, as I am, that chemtrails would inadvertently be bringing these things down to ground level, making people very ill, which in fact is what we are seeing. Hospital emergency rooms crowded with people suffering from asthma, allergies, heart problems, lung problems, not caused only by the small particulate size of the chemtrails themselves, the chemicals, but by these airborne pathogens. As we know, the Internet is filled with theories about biowarfare and culling the population. Our lab tests do not show this to be happening. However, I would call it inadvertent biowarfare, and since we're 8 years into this, and the people doing it know about the hospital admissions, they know about the deaths of the elderly, they continue to do this, well, at that point, it no longer becomes inadvertent.
Can we reverse this, William, and say maybe they're trying to kill these viruses up there with some kind of chemical?
There would be no need. They stay up there. They don't bother anybody. If they did precipitate out on their own, they primarily fall into the oceans. We're on a planet that is really a water world of some three-quarters oceans. I'm an ocean sailor. I've seen quite a bit of it. These critters would come down and not hurt anyone. And, in fact, scientists have collected quite a few of them off our coastal waters. So there's no need to go after them.
So your top thought on chemtrails would be climate modification.
Absolutely. Remember, this whole thing was brought on by the late Dr. Edward Teller at an international conference on planetary emergencies way back in 98, when climate change, global warming started to get really literally heat up, bringing tropical fish off the beaches of Washington coast near where I'm speaking tonight, Scotland, hurricanes, record-breaking winds. Teller stood up and said, we need to put a sunscreen up that will deflect 1% of incoming sunlight and chill out this global warming before it becomes a runaway phenomena. It was the environmental consultant Mike Castle who came up with the patent issued to Hughes Aircraft in 94, calling for just such a sunscreen to be spread by jet aircraft using aluminum oxide particles, very fine particles. We've also found quartz and barium particles in actual lab tests of chemtrail fallout, all of these very highly reflectant. I called up Ken Caldera at Lawrence Livermore, who ran the computer simulations, and he said, yes, I did that. I wanted to prove Dr. Teller wrong. I thought it was a bad idea, he told me. But in fact, the computer said, we can have no net warming over the Earth despite an anticipated 50% increase in CO2 by 2050. Well, that proved to be very wrong. The planet, as you know, is heating up very rapidly indeed. But between the patent and at Teller's suggestion and our lab tests that confirm the patent, and particularly the federal aviation people themselves, the air traffic controllers continue to tell us this is a climate modification experiment. And I'm good to go with that, frankly. We are in an emergency situation on this planet. The oil interests in Washington do not want to give up their profits, as we're seeing quite radically in recent weeks. And this was supposed to be the quick fix to allow petroleum pollution and profits as usual.
Richard C. Hoagland echoes what you believe. He believes it's also climate modification, any attempt to cool the planet down, and that they've been doing it for some time.
Yes, I'll quickly add that the two scientists at Wright-Patterson said, we're working on chemtrails. They didn't use that name, but we're working on this spreading of chemicals. One is for climate modification, and the other, we're spreading barium aerial antennas, temporary antennas, they said, and the Air Force talks about this. They're quite proud about it. You can find it online. And this is, they're able to duct or conduct radar and radio beams over the horizon. The scientists said they were using this in Afghanistan to fly the drones around. They blew up some 41 vehicles in the desert without identifying the occupants first. The satellite relays were just too slow to fly the drones accurately, and they were using chemtrails, according to these scientists, to fly the drones.
If it is climate modification, William, to cool the planet, do you think they have an obligation to just simply tell us what they're doing?
Well, absolutely, particularly with all of the illnesses, the impacts on, looks like, vegetation, changing the electrical conductivity of the soil. We found that in lab tests in Edmonton, Alberta, the illnesses of pets and people, and the dire emergency that this planet is in, that most of the rest of the world, particularly Europe, is well aware of and taking steps to ameliorate. Here in North America, and I include Canada in that statement, we've got our heads in the sand, and we need the government to come clean on what we must do. And the scientists say it's not a matter of technology. Ken Caldera said these chemtrails are going to destroy, these are his words, destroy the ozone layer. This is not helping. This isn't a good idea.
Well, funny, better this, scientists,
stop burning carbon.
Scientists just said, if you can believe them, that they think the ozone layer is starting to grow again, starting to replenish itself.
We've been hearing that for some years now, and the actual fact of the matter is it is not. It is not replenishing itself. We have about 100 years on the replenishing cycle. We have an epidemic of skin cancers and cataracts here in North America and other high-latitude countries as we speak. So, no, that's a negative on that, primarily because of the incredible amount of jet traffic. You're probably aware, our listeners are aware, that this is increasing as we speak. Some 55 million flights a year. I can't even picture that, but gridlock in the skies. And the aircraft people, the engine makers, have been working very hard to eliminate contrails, which disturb the climate balance, and they've succeeded in taking most of the sulfur emissions out of the jet engines. The bad news is they've increased the nitrous oxide emissions, which eats up the ozone layer and traps about 21 times more heat than carbon. So jet traffic is a real problem. The Government of England commissioned a study recently, and it said we've got to ground jets immediately, stop flying in the stratosphere. Lower altitude's fine if you must, but not in the stratosphere.
Interesting. I have a friend of mine. He's a doctor of dermatology, William, and he says that they're beginning to see cases of people coming down with very strange skin lesions, and he says we have no idea what's causing this.
I would suggest he look at UV levels and possibly chemtrails as well. We have anecdotal reports of staph infections and flesh-eating disease associated, I must stress, associated with the chemtrail phenomena. I have no evidence of a direct correlation.
Are they chemtrailing in Europe as well or not?
Yes, I have recent reports out of Switzerland, Sweden, St. Petersburg, Russia. Quite amazed to see this. I have a videotape, very convincing, sent to me from South Korea. I have no idea of the frequency. I'm told that Holland is being hammered regularly, the UK, Scotland, Ireland, England itself. Germany just had someone come back from Italy and phone me up saying that she saw many chemtrails over Italy. So the short answer is yes. Plenty of chemtrails appearing over Europe. And by the way, George, there's quite a furor among the public in the EU about chemtrails, and I've been sending information to German scientists. As you know, they're very picky about proving things, but they're looking at this with some interest. It's my hope that the European Union will publicly and globally condemn chemtrails just as they condemned the HAARP experiments.
All right, stay with us. William Thomas, our guest. That wraps up our discussion, our update on chemtrails. His website is willthomas.net, willthomas.net, and he has updated his U.S. edition of Chemtrails Confirmed. And, you know, this is something that's been going on for years and years and years, and it's good to find out from an expert, William Thomas, who has devoted years of his life to investigating environmental and health-related issues as well, that his theory is primarily that these chemtrails are climate modification events. And look, all you have to do is go outside. You know what I'm talking about. You will see, and it's not just jet vapor fuel. This something's going on up there. You could see it every day. And in some cities, St. Louis, Portland, you name it, it's up there all the time. I'll be back in a moment as we get into another exclusive story for you that William Thomas has been working on for some time, and we'll bring in another guest. He's anonymous. I'll explain that when I come back on Coast to Coast AM. In an earlier book, Scorched Earth, William was one of the first authors to expose the hazards of military and civilian microwave radiation. And as many of you will recall on his most recent appearance here on Coast to Coast, William Thomas and I discussed the hazards of cell phones. In 7 appearances with Art and myself, this was one of our biggest shows ever. Well, tonight promises something even bigger. William Thomas has an exclusive story for us. This is a very unbelievable topic of mind control, manipulation of people and government leaders of Iraq using technology, he says, that is also affecting our own troops over there, some of whom are listening to this program, by the way, right now. And that's not all. William's source for this story is a Gulf War veteran that we will call tonight Hank to protect his identity. He's also agreed to come on the air and tell us what he can about these devices called poppers, what they are, what they do, where they are being used today. None of what you will be hearing tonight is classified military information. However, to protect Hank and his sources in Iraq and the Pentagon, it is important that we just don't use his real name. So let's now go back to William Thomas. William, of course, this is truly, on the face of it, an unbelievable story.
It is. This story is, frankly, a poison to journalists. I've resisted the mind control story for some years, even as I researched it. And tonight, I'm going to be speaking as a journalist concerned only with verified, corroborated, factual information. We're not going to go way out there. We're going to go way inside this story and deal with facts that all Americans should hear, all the people of Iraq, including the serving American soldiers who are not being told what is happening to them.
I got to tell you, too, William, on the face of it, knowing that we are in a full conflict over there, after I was watching the many things that you have researched along with Hank, the Navy part of me, quite honestly, said, boy, if we have this kind of equipment, this is good stuff. It's working for us. So throughout tonight, as we talk about this, you might have to try to convince me why this might not be the best thing to have, okay?
This former Navy man is happy to do that.
All right. Let's talk a little bit, if you can, William. Tell me about Hank, who's on the other line.
All right. I met this individual and many others while researching a book on Gulf War illness. This was the first fully documented expose of this illness. As you mentioned, I served with a civilian environmental response team. We were all very ill. I was sick for a year after coming home, but I did not have the vaccines and other exposures of these troops, and we wore gas masks and respirators all the time. I interviewed Hank and others about their experience over there and was able, through this book, to follow the trail of this illness. And in the subsequent years, Hank and I have worked together developing other stories. I've never known his factual information to be wrong. When he speculates, he flags speculation. When he tells me a fact, it always checks out. I trust this man implicitly, and he has shown great courage to come forward with this story. He is a patriot. He is concerned, as I am, about our country, the United States. He's concerned about his fellow brothers and sisters in the military, as I am, and he's concerned about the children and the people of Iraq, as I am. So I salute him coming forward tonight.
Well, let's bring him on. Hank, of course, is not your real name. Is there a reason, Hank, that you do not want your first name given?
Yes, sir. The bottom line is, with the exposure I've had in the Gulf War community, as well as the intelligence communities, military in general, with the attachment of me personally to this, it would be way too easy to track it back to the sources that I used that I got the information from, and it would burn them.
All right, literally. So you're trying to protect your sources primarily then?
Yes, sir. This is not about me. As Will can attest to this, I have not sought the limelight, unfortunately, with the connections that I've had through the military and, again, the intelligence communities, and I have to say plural on that. I do have access to a lot of information, and I have tried to put it out personally. But when you see something of this magnitude come in front of you, and I didn't look for it, it came and found me. That's one thing I want to make absolutely clear. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead, Hank.
Well, all I was going to say is when something of this nature gets dropped in your lap and you look at it with a rather jaundiced eye for a long time, it can only go for so long before you say, okay, I have to do something. And that's pretty much where
okay,
I'm at right
well,
now.
Well, this is going to be an interesting discussion with both of you. Now, William, when you were on with me in January of 2005, and we talked primarily about cell phones, you were kind of leading up to something like this or hinting about something like this, if I recall.
That's right. I had actually, about the same time, broken this part of this story internationally. It was picked up by The Independent in England, and much to my amazement, this story on microwaving Iraq, as it was called, was tabled in the House of Parliament in England and in Congress in the United States, with questions on both sides of the Atlantic. What is this guy talking about? What is going on over there? The exclusive that we're offering our listeners tonight on Coast to Coast has to do with recent information that these so-called poppers were being used to target the Iraqi leadership, including and particularly a gentleman named Muqtada al-Sadr. And this is never been made public before tonight.
All right, and tell us, what are poppers?
Poppers are a gray dome about a meter in diameter. The GIs over there refer to them as poppers and as sonic mines. They are, in fact, transmitters derived from U.S. Navy sonar, recent advances in sonar that the Navy has been experimenting with and getting into quite a lot of trouble for harming sea mammals, particularly whales and dolphins, and the Navy has actually admitted to recent beachings of these animals, bleeding from their ears and skulls. These sonars have been placed on U.S. Navy destroyers, and, as I mentioned, transmit on various frequencies to look for submarines, to outline the seabed in a 3D mapping capability. Unfortunately, these sea creatures have very sensitive hearing. The Navy has been sued by environmental groups for this work and have been told by courts to stop using the low-frequency sonars worldwide, but it's the mid-frequencies, apparently, that are doing quite a bit of damage. And the Navy has continued to experiment and has observed the sea life and noted, well, heck, these are mammals. How would these things work ashore against other mammals, human beings? Let's try that. And I've been told that the 00 Bravos at JFK Special Warfare School, North Carolina, have warned American troops that if they're ever swimming, this goes for any listener, by the way, if you're swimming someplace and you see a U.S. warship with bumps along the side of the hull, get out of the water. 00 Bravos are U.S. Navy divers, and it was a frogman ordered to get into the water to, quote, get dolphins used to divers. That's what he was told. And without his foreknowledge, he was apparently hit with a high-energy blast from one of these sonars at a depth of around 20 feet. He went completely rigid. They could not reach him by radio. They could see the bubbles from his rebreather, but the air being pumped to him was going right by him. His heartbeat, his lungs were permanently shut down, and he died. He drowned.
He died?
He died. They pulled his corpse up. I don't know what they told his wife and family, but there was graphic evidence of what these things could do in a liquid medium, transmitting on extreme low frequency, ultra low, very low, and UHF and microwave frequencies.
Now, Hank, the information we're going to talk about tonight, none of this is classified, I assume.
No, sir, it is not classified, and as Will was alluding to, this is something that has been based on technology that has been, shall we say, known about publicly since the 1940s. This also includes the Soviet attempt to more or less microwave and or blast the American embassy with what was colloquially known as the Woodpecker. This follows the same type of technology that they have more or less coalesced into a single unit that can be deployed out into the world in general, and they can more or less dial up or down the frequencies in order to get what they consider to be the responses that they're looking for.
Now, on the face of it, is there anything wrong with having this kind of technology in order to control crowds or to change the perception of an enemy?
It would really depend on two things. First off, who's using it, and secondly, to what end.
Okay, I agree with that.
Those two things are so variable.
I agree with that. And if it's used in warfare, I would be more apt to say, okay, that's fine. I think one of your concerns, and yours too, William, is what happens if it comes home.
Correct.
Another concern about innocent civilians. The military makes the argument that this so-called non-lethal technology is a lot better, as harsh as it is, a lot better than being shot in the head with a high-velocity round, better to be hit with one of these things, poppers, and be temporarily put out of commission in that your brains are scrambled, you can't think straight, mm-hmm. you cannot mount a resistance. This sounds good, but let's face it, folks, we're talking about mind rape. We're talking about people having their will taken away from them, and we are talking in all modern war situations, primarily non-combatants. We are talking women, children, men who are not wearing uniform. They're in cities like Fallujah, Ramadi, Ramallah. They're being hit with these things. They don't know what it is. They are already traumatized by horrific weapons, white phosphorus, depleted uranium radiation, high-velocity rounds, horrific casualties around them, and now American forces have been hitting them, unknown to them, with microwave and other frequencies. I think this is a war crime.
Well, you're going to get some people, William, who are going to say you're unpatriotic, that you're not supporting the troops. What are you trying to do?
I am supporting the troops because the troops are being affected by these weapons, George, and they are not being told. I have been in the U.S. military. I'm on the side of the troops, and I am on the side of people who did not ask for their presence and who are suffering greatly, horrific casualties, and the trauma of these children had better start to be publicized in the United States of America. This is patriotism, to look hard at the cost of war and the reasons we are going to war.
Is this machine, this technology, is it doing what it's supposed to do?
To a certain extent, yes. Sorry if I'm breaking
in. No. It's free flowing, Hank. So you and William jump in anytime.
Go. All right. Essentially, the wanted effect and the actual effect can vary greatly. One of the main reasons for that is humans vary, and you'd never really know exactly what effect you're going to get from whatever you try to do. Now, that in mind, over a certain amount of time, an equilibrium can be reached where pretty much everybody within the field effect of this is going to eventually go into the same basic direction. So based on studies that they did and the uses that they put it to out in the ocean, they were able to use this on literally hundreds, possibly thousands of marine animals, whales, dolphins, etc. And more often than not, they did get the type of effect they were looking for, but it was the initial use of these that caused the biggest problem, because when you first turn these on, you never really know what frequency to use exactly to get the effect you're looking for or the amount of power that will give you what you want.
So you just play with the dials, I guess, huh?
Pretty much. You can start out looking for a crowd that's already looking a little angry,
mm-hmm.
Not too good. You can turn this on, and you can make things much worse, radically worse.
How so?
Well, you can drive people into a frenzy, literally.
And could you make them more dangerous?
Yes.
Ah.
You can take away the inhibitions, and I'm sure most of your listeners and yourself have heard of this, the reptile brain as opposed to the mammal brain.
Yes, absolutely.
Once you take away a person's will and you make them not the person they used to be, you're stripping away literally civilization, society, what keeps us from doing things that we would do in certain situations.
So rather than rendering them, in some cases, very harmless, we turn them into animals, basically.
Correct. And there's no reasoning with a person once you do something like this. Picture a mean drunk. That's essentially what you're taking a chance on. You hand someone a bottle of alcohol and you say, okay, here, drink up for the first time. You don't know if they're going to be the nicest, easiest going person you've ever run into or somebody who just wants to bust down walls and run over people. And that's the kind of variability we're talking about, because this literally takes away a person's natural inhibition that a person learns from birth and resorts them to literally the ages of between a 2 and a 5-year-old's ability to choose what's right, what's wrong, survival, how to interact with others, that sort of thing. So you may have a really nice kid, or you may have one that screams its head off in the middle of a mall, and there's really no way to tell until you flip the switch and you see what happens.
Tell me a little bit about why you've decided to reveal some of this information to William Thomas. And we'll really get into the story at the top of next hour.
Well, first off, Will is a really good guy. He has been doing good work, and I'm putting that in all capitals. And he is the type of person who will look into this. If there's something wrong, he will point it out, and I really appreciate that about him. Once he took a look at this, and I presented it more or less over a long period of time as I got information, he and I both saw that this was wrong all the way around. The troops were being affected. The people they were supposed to be taken care of were being affected. There was really no way to say one way or the other if it was going to be a good effect or a bad effect on the part of the Department of Defense, the people that were using this. And the effects were not being acknowledged. There were troops that were literally walking away from their posts and then coming back several days later, not understanding why they left.
They had no idea. They lost time.
They were just out of there. They would walk away from their post and disappear for a short period of time, several days, and then they would come back, and the other people around them would ask, you know, where have you been? What have you been doing? And they had no answer. So once the commanders started realizing that this was starting to happen, not just once, but, you know, 10s, 15s, 20s, that kind of thing, they started asking questions and were more or less told by the intelligence community that was running this operation, and specifically ONI, the Office of Naval Intelligence, once they came back with the answer, well, it's hush-hush, just take care of these guys, take them back into the fold, don't make a big deal out of it. You might want to keep an eye on them for a little while, but they'll be okay eventually. They took them back into the fold, and that pretty much turned out to be true.
If the technology is turned on, can you wear some kind of earphones or something in order to prevent it?
There is. The only thing that you can do is limit your exposure. This is something that literally will go through walls, will go through bone, flesh, metal, anything. And the longer it's in an area, the more it will permeate that area, and everything will literally act like a tuning fork to those frequencies. And there's more than one frequency being used by these poppers, by the way. It's not just extremely low or ultra-high microwave or anything like that. They literally can broadcast on multiple frequencies at the same time, which can give you a more like a synergism effect.
Yes, and also, if I may, we're talking about a four-day exposure time. The Army engineers will go into service and refuel these big generators that run the poppers that are put up on the rooftops and the upper rooms in places like Fallujah. Encounter townspeople, as Hank was mentioning, who are out of it, totally out of it. And the Army engineers started to wonder, well, what's going to happen to us with repeated exposure? Again, 4 days of exposure to the people and the troops in that area. And look at the troops. They're in a combat situation. In fact, the most dangerous urban combat environment American troops have ever faced. There is no safe rear area.
Well, stay with us, William, because let's talk more about this technology when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. William, let me ask you this. A lot of Americans have talked about losing time from point A to point B, these crazy abduction cases that we hear. What are the possibilities that some of these microwave manipulators have beamed them on people, and what they might think are ET interventions are really events such as this? Who knows what happens when your brain is scrambled?
Certainly the technology has been worked on since the 40s, as Hank mentioned, particularly got going in the 60s with so-called breakthroughs by Joseph Delgado and others, able to influence implants in people's brains at a distance, and then later able to influence people without implants by broadcasting certain frequencies. I guess my response as a reporter is, when I'm asked this by people who call me up and tell me they're being targeted by, you know, the van across the street with the strange antenna, I ask them, what is your profile? What threat do you present to the people you imagine beaming you? In most cases, if not all cases, I can't imagine why a government or intelligence service would go after these individuals. I certainly have a profile, as you've noted, in sensitive topics. To my knowledge, I have not been targeted in any way. The technology exists, the possibility exists, and also what absolutely exists today is very high levels of electromagnetic pollution. In fact, any listener wants to win a bar bet, ask the person next to you what's the biggest pollutant on planet Earth. Correct answer is electromagnetics, some 100 million times increase in electromagnetics filling the entire spectrum, microwave relays, cell phone relays, radars, radios, television, on and on. We're saturated in the stuff. All of it affects us. Our brains and our cells operate at 0.07 volts. And when we get hit with this stuff, especially at 60 cycles and 40 cycles, it entrains our brain and cellular processes and can throw us completely out of whack.
Well, if you stay under a high-voltage transmission line for any great deal of time, you're going to get whacked out, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. And Hank mentioned the Soviet experiment, the Pandora Project. That was the CIA monitoring of the U.S. Embassy being hit in Moscow. They didn't warn their fellow Americans. They took notes. And the notes said that the low-energy microwaves these people were being hit with, one ambassador died of a heart attack, by the way. Others were hospitalized. This energy is lower than the energy we see in the typical American city today. So we don't need to postulate government or intelligence agencies doing this to us. Corporations are doing it to us even as we speak.
Well, Hank, you know, even though we're not using your real name on the program tonight, you do risk getting found out. You know that.
Yes, and at this point, that's just going to have to be the way it is. This has to come out. It has to come out because there are an untold number of people being affected, and as both of you have just stated, this is something that you don't have to have somebody sitting across the street doing this to you. It can be done from a distance. It can be done covertly. Even if you know more or less what's happening to you, you're more or less going to be rendered incapable of doing anything about it, mainly because of what effect it has on you. It's the next best thing to call it what it is, an e-fog. It's an electronic fogging of your ability to be who you are.
Now, let's not argue tonight about the merits of whether we should or should not be in Iraq, but the fact is we are there. Should we not at least attempt to win with the best technology we have out there?
We should if it's something that doesn't make the problem worse. That in and of itself would be my direct answer to it, because if you know what the effect is going to be, I mean, if you shoot somebody, you know obviously what the effect is going to be right there and then. With something like this, you're depending on literally stripping away what makes another person that person and then supplanting it with what you want them to think, feel, and do.
Well,
and,
but, you know, part of the problem, though, Hank, is they're not wearing uniforms.
No,
so,
not.
You know, for an American trooper there, you know, a soldier is there, they don't even know who the combatant is.
No, I agree. The combat operations that I've been a part of, there have been some rather, well, call it what it is, bad moments, and you never truly know who your enemy is until after they fired at you.
Sometimes easier then just to flip a switch of this kind of technology and worry about the problem later.
Well, therein lies another rub. What happens later when you turn the switch off and you say, okay, mission accomplished, everything's cool, and people go back to who they were, and then they look back on what has just occurred while they were out of the house, so to speak, and they realize they've been schnookered, taken advantage of, whatever, and they revolt against what you just accomplished.
Okay, so do they then revert back to their old ways,
or
does their brain become mush forever?
Well, there again, it also depends on proximity, the amount of time that you have to use it, and the power you use. And picture a typical radio wave or a microwave. If you left the oven door open on your microwave in your kitchen and you just push it on for a second at the highest level.
Well, I'm not sure my microwave works without the door closed.
Well, just if you were exposed to it. Let's say the seal was bad or whatever.
Okay.
If you put that on for, let's say, a second at the highest power level, you would get a flash of high energy coming out at you, and it would probably cause some form of burns or something very noticeable. If, however, you left it on for 5 seconds at the lowest power setting, it would still be cooking you, but it wouldn't be an immediately readily available type of occurrence.
A slow boil, huh?
Basically, yes. So the effects would still be there. You wouldn't see them immediately. And as Will has attested in a number of the items that he has come out with, and people should really look into this a lot more with him. If you beam something at a person its temporary effects will fade away, but there are going to be long-term and permanent effects, regardless of what level you do this at. There's going to be, because you're changing the physical structure of a person, and you're reducing the electronics that the body normally functions under. So even during that temporary time frame, your body's going to have to change routes. It's going to have to change tactics in order to accomplish what it normally does during the course of your life. Now, when you turn everything off and it snaps back to where you used to be, those systems may or may not go right back to where they were. That in and of itself can cause a huge number of health problems from cancer on down. So
it'd be interesting when we open up the phone lines next hour, William and Hank, just to see who agrees with using this kind of technology and who agrees that it should be tossed out. William, tell me a little bit more. Let's talk about the poppers and then follow this course here.
Sure.
When was it first developed again, and by whom?
U.S. Navy. In recent decades, we're a couple of decades into this, I understand. But U.S. Navy technology, Office of Naval Intelligence, one of the leading, if we want to use that word, it's fitting, mind control and weapons research laboratories on the planet. They started looking at this. They were first deployed, the poppers now. 25 of these were sent overseas, first deployed in Afghanistan and, quote, field tested there, particularly in the mountains, going after an individual whose name we're all aware of, Osama bin Laden and his followers, and then transferred back to Iraq when the situation deteriorated there, used in Fallujah first and other cities that followed, and then some of them sent back to Afghanistan and kind of ping-ponged back and forth between the two countries as situations improved and then deteriorated in both countries. The total number, again, was 25 poppers. We're looking at devices that have up to a half a mile range under normal circumstances in a city such as Fallujah. But when you overlap two poppers deliberately, you get double the range, I understand. And what is it, Hank, quadruple the power?
That's at a minimum. They literally feed off of each other. Picture taking two soap bubbles and moving them across the top of water towards each other.
Okay, now let me ask you this. Now, when you say the range, William and Hank, half a mile, that's out. What about the width of this thing?
Circular range, omnidirectional.
Half a mile.
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's a lot of land.
Especially now, that's a mile in diameter. That's quite a big area, and as Hank said, goes through everything. So that's an effective range, and doubled or more when these poppers have put down overlaying fields of, in this case, radiation.
How old is the technology?
It was first really looked into in the 1940s when World War II ended. Well, I should say ended. We gained a lot of access to the German innovations in radar. We had talked to the English, the Russians, Italians. Basically, we picked up a lot of new things from them, including the Japanese. We fielded it in order to get a better idea of what we were driving our ships and our submarines on and into. So they literally started as a mapping expedition. It was more or less look down radar for the ships to be able to map the entirety of the bottom of the ocean. When they started using it, they started seeing noticeable effects in the marine life, and also when they were starting to train dolphins to be mine detectors, that also led to a major problem because the divers that were in the water working with these animals mm-hmm. would see the effects on the dolphins first, and then, as Will was relating to you earlier, they would become affected as well.
So the dolphins got scrambled, and so did the seamen.
Yes, sir. And when the dolphins had this happen to them, there were events where they would literally be driven into a frenzy, and since it was out in the ocean, they really couldn't do anything that would be similar to a beaching. But if they would have been closer to land, they probably would have. It would have driven them that crazy. And in other events, entire schools of these animals would literally just go totally lax underneath the water, just floating there, and they would end up drowning.
Now, what when we talk about the fact that you're dealing with non-classified information,
yes, sir.
Somebody listening to us tonight, Hank or William, say, okay, come on now, give me proof. As a matter of fact, I had a caller last hour that says, show me proof. Show me proof about UFOs. Show me proof about this and that. Where's our proof on something like this? I mean, has the military admitted something? Is it in writing? What can people do or say to say, okay, this is out there, it's real?
Well, if you look at the events as they happened, the absolutely out of the clear blue changes in some of the events that occurs, one noticeable one, the wedding party that was fired upon in Afghanistan by the United States government. We flew not only an AC-130 gunship over this, but we also used a B-52 bomber, which is a strategic asset, for goodness sake, in order to do this. So we literally peppered the entire area and used massive amounts of armament against someone who was supposed to be our friend. Now, the story of whether or not they were taking fire, whether they had planned this, not even going to get into that because that's politics. But the bottom line is the Afghani people that heard of this literally were making statements to the effect of, we're going to beat the Americans on the heads with our shoes and drive them from our country, which in that part of the world is the worst insult you can possibly imagine making against another person. Now, following that kind of an uprising, people in the streets, just mobs going crazy, in a few days, suddenly it's back to, oh, the Americans are our friends, everything's fine, come on down. Excuse me?
So a quick reversal, you're saying.
Yeah, and that in that part of the world, been there, done that, you know, you don't have that kind of reaction from the folks in that part of the world. When you do something to them, their brethren, their countrymen, you have to make it right. You have to do something in order to negate what you did earlier.
So you're saying we flip the old machine on them?
Pretty much. And you see the results. Each time something like this happened, Muqtadir al-Sadr, as case in point, what Will was talking about earlier.
That's the one in Fallujah, right?
Yes, sir.
All right.
He is known as a quote-unquote radical Islamic cleric. Now, you would imagine when somebody puts that type of a title on someone who's in his 30s, typically not the person you want to sit down, have a drink, or, you know, just have a chat with or something like that. You tend to avoid this person. This is someone who is known to foment rebellion in that area.
Right.
Well, he would have such flip-flopping back and forth. One day the Americans are our enemy, kill every last one of them, blow up the sewers underneath them if you have to, and the next it's, well, you know, why don't we sit down and have a chat? You know, let's talk this over. Totally diametric reaction.
Maybe he was rational and came to his senses.
Well, that's where the problem with these types of mechanisms come in. You may be taking away the peaceful aspect as well as the warlike aspect. Someone who is willing to sit down and actually talk this out and say, okay, let's have a discourse, let's do this. You may be taking that thought out of their head and turning them right around in the opposite direction that you wanted, and suddenly they've got guns in their hands and they're shooting at you. That's the real danger of these things, the unpredictability.
Technically, how does this thing work?
It literally jangles the nerves in the body to the point where you become overstimulated, and it numbs you to any kind of input. Closest thing I can relate it to with the ultra-low frequencies, picture being inside of a large room with nothing but Mack trucks or something similarly large surrounding it. You get that vibration coming through every last bit of
almost you. Like you feel something shaking or the earth is moving, something
right.
Like that.
Exactly.
Which a lot of people, by the way, are strangely feeling in some regions of this country, and they don't know where it's coming from.
Yes, sir, they are. Well, after a certain amount of time, if you don't know the source of something of that nature, you may stumble a little, you may be a little disoriented, not hear correctly, not see correctly, but eventually you start to compensate for that, and your body tones down what you normally do to what would be considered survival tactics. The more this hits you, the more survival takes over and the less rational, logical thought is actually going to come to the forefront. So once this numbs you down, it's literally attacking every nerve on the exterior of your body and on the interior of your body all at once.
Now, you're talking about the size of the popper, but is there a bigger piece of machinery attached to it, or is it just that?
It's just that. And they have gotten to the point where they have micro-miniaturized the electronics that are required, and they've stripped away the things they don't need and chest capped the things that they did.
Let me jump in here quickly and note
surely.
That these things are attached by a green umbilical cord to a very large generator, three to five.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Kilowatt.
Well, yes, okay.
That would be at street level delivered by a trailer truck.
How many attached to one generator?
Typically it's one per.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you've got 20 poppers, you've got 20 of these large generators out there.
And the thing that really should make people scratch their heads is this is an area where any type of piece of mechanism that's operational is unusual. I mean, we've bombed, well, say it the way it is, bombed the crap out of the place. There's nothing but a bunch of sticks and rocks laying around, and a majority of the place that did have electricity does not have it available now. So you would imagine a 3K or a 5K or even up to a 10K generator. That'd be a 3, 5, or 10 kilowatt generator is what it's putting out. One of those parked next to a fully standing building and operating would be something unusual that people would tend to notice, point at, and say, okay, we don't have air conditioning, we don't have lights, and yet they've got this thing running and the cable's going to the roof. What are they doing up there?
Is this also used for controlling crowds and demonstrations?
Yes, sir. It would work in any of those type of situations. The only problem is, in order to get a immediate response, let's say somebody's marching down the street towards you right now.
And you want to slow them down or stop them or send them back.
Right. You wouldn't really be able to do that immediately, such as a crowd pops up at 1 p.m. and you can send them home by 3 p.m. You would have to crank up the dial on that so high that you would see really immediate effects.
All right, so this is not, Hank, the apparatus we've heard about that renders people down to their knees clutching their ears.
No. That would be a totally different mechanism. Those
okay.
do exist, though.
That's an acoustical device.
Yes.
Yeah, that was an experiment. That was taken to Iraq as well, wasn't it?
Yes, sir.
And New York City during recent protests there. We have photographs.
How about, are you talking about the illegal immigration protests?
No, I'm talking about the anti-war protests, the big one in New York last year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, these have been fielded, these have been tried and tested, and as far as them actually working, we're talking the same type of mentality towards this. In other words, like Will was saying, non-lethal weapons. But when you're using something like this on a crowd, literally, you either want an immediate knockdown effect or you want to be able to saturate the area where the crowd lives and reduce them to the point where they cannot get together and mob you anymore.
Let's find out when we come back why both of you are opposed to this kind of mind control technology. Later on, next hour, we'll open up the phone lines. We'll get your take on all this as well. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk about a 19th century prophet here in America. Incredible story. And also next hour, we're, of course, going to take your phone calls for our two special guests, William Thomas and the person we call Hank. With William, of course, you can ask him about this subject matter or chemtrails as well. And we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Let's get your response first, William, then you, Hank. You're both opposed to the use of this technology. William, why?
Because it's being used primarily against civilian populations and because it's harming U.S. military personnel and because it takes away our free will without prior consent or notification. I'm not a pacifist, George. I'm not speaking anti-militarily tonight. I'm anti-military being betrayed and abused. I'm anti-military being ordered to, or forced to commit atrocities and exposed to these things, these experimental weapons and drugs, uranium radiation. And then as we're seeing, traumatized, maimed by the thousands and thrown out like used tissue paper from Vietnam to the present war over there. I've wanted to fly jets off carriers, George, since I was old enough to say airplane. And at the Gulf of Tonkin, I was a very ticked off American and very proud to don a uniform to defend my country. Of course, the Gulf of Tonkin never happened, just one of many lies. And just a few months before flight school in Pensacola and the realization of a lifelong dream, I had an epiphany, and I realized that the families I was about to be ordered to napalm were no different over there in Vietnam from my own family in America. And it was, I must say, the hardest and proudest decision I ever made to resign my commission and refuse to take part in that war.
Is that what happened to you then? You just said, I'm not going to do this anymore.
I wrestled with this for years in the reserve officer training, and I finally couldn't handle the contradiction. I drove home on a Christmas to visit my family. I wore my uniform. My father was career Navy. I was very proud of it. I got out of the car, and I saw my family on the front steps to greet me in Michigan, and I saw an F-4 Phantom come over the garage and drop a napalm canister on my family, and they vaporized in front of my eyes. Of course, this was a vision, very powerful vision, and I realized in that instant, George, that the peasant families in Vietnam who just wanted to raise their kids in peace, like my own family, were really no different, and I could not, I just could not in conscience attack those people on the orders of a commander-in-chief. As I said in my letter of resignation to DND in Washington, I couldn't do that. I couldn't follow those orders. And we're seeing the same thing in Iraq. Whatever the original intention, you talked about winning the war. I'm sure Hank is with me on this. What is the mission exactly? You know, get rid of a dictator that we put in place and supported for decades. Save people that we...
All right, but let's not get too political here.
Well, you know, we have to look at this. If we're talking about the use of weapons, regardless of what the weapon is, we have to look at the consequences, George, the cost, and say, you know, why are we doing this? If it's self-defense, I'm all for it. I don't have a problem.
Hank, how about you? You're opposed to this piece of technology.
Yeah, and as a military veteran myself, I've had, to be a little vague about it, I've had more than 10 years worth of military experience. Let's put it that way. I've seen combat, been there, done that, got the brown T-shirt, all that, and not afraid to say flat out, if force is required, then force is used. I have no problem with that. The problem I have is when we decide where and how to use that force and on whom.
Yeah.
That seems to be the real tearing point here, and as far as Iraq, Afghanistan, you know, pick your country, doesn't matter who's next.
Or Iran,
yeah. Well, that's a sticking point for pretty much everybody right now because it is who's next.
We should flip this kind of technology on that Iranian president and maybe just shut him up for a while.
Well, it may shut him up or it may make him worse. That's the real problem here. We're dropping a bomb out of a plane and thinking, okay, are we over America? Are we over our enemy? We don't know who we're over when we drop that bomb. We wait until it hits and then say, oh, that's who we hit. Okay, now fire for effect. That's more or less what this is coming down to. It's an unpredictable weapon. It's being fielded by individuals who don't really care what the effect is going to
be. Well, did it work on Sadr? Because, you both illustrate the example that he was out of control in Fallujah, and then several days later, he's talking about trying to work things out. I mean, to me, if that happened that way, the thing maybe worked on the guy.
Well, these events were occurring during the time when the poppers were turned on, so we're really not able to say if he was going to go one way or the other. We don't. That is the sticking point on this, George. We don't have the ability to say if we left it off, he still would have picked up a weapon and said, okay, you know, let's go fight. Or if he would have come to his senses and said, you know, this is pointless. We're in our own country. We're blowing it up ourselves. We should be working together with these guys who have the ability to build it. Why don't we go that route and, you know, things go from there? We don't know which way he would have gone because from the time they were turned on and left on, he would go into these areas where they were on. We would try to anticipate where he was going to go and put them there ahead of him and his followers. We would turn them on. We don't know if we actually incited them to violence or calmed them down. We don't know. And that in and of itself should be enough to scare the people who started this into thinking more than twice about ever using them again.
The soldiers who turn on the equipment, do they get damaged as well? If they're, let's say, behind this big transmitter?
There are some that would have an immediate effect. In other words, they would feel something on their skin as if... Well, the way it had been described to me was having ants inside of your uniform.
Because if it is a radius piece of technology, they're going to get blasted.
Yes. the people who are supposed to drive around in these areas and refuel them, do PMCS on them, in other words, preventive maintenance and check services, the guys that are supposed to babysit these pieces of equipment, they're not informed immediately by the intelligence guys, what I nicknamed the intel weenies. They don't tell these guys what it is that they're servicing or what they're taking care of. They're simply there to provide power for something. They don't know if it's a radar installation up there, a repeater station for cell phones or whatever. They're not informed about it, and the information that I've gotten has more or less been gleaned from the individuals on the spot, making sense of what they saw, talking to more individuals like themselves who had seen the same thing, and then building this information and then going back and checking on it and then building more information. So this isn't something where, you know, somebody saw it one afternoon that had a nice little nameplate on the side of it saying, mind control mechanism, please step back. You know, they actually have put this together over a long period of time, and they're still there watching out for things like this. But to use something of this nature and not be able to say, point front toward enemy, and this is the direction it's going to go in, to put your own people at risk, and to have, and I'm sure you've heard this actually in the open news now, we have a record number of suicides, we have a record number of desertions, We don't have the ability to put plastic forks into the hands of the people who need to eat over there, we can't keep up with bullets over there, and yet we're messing with the minds of individuals we can't sit across the table from and understand when they're in their normal mind.
Is this an experiment?
It has been an experiment for quite a time. The ONI is more or less taking the initiative and putting this into the field and saying, okay, let's see what happens. And I think we've pretty much seen what happens. We were told initially that when we went into Iraq, we were going to be met by people who looked upon us as defenders and people who would have flowers thrown at their feet, that sort of thing. That did not occur. Let's be blunt. That did not occur. But for someone who is even vaguely knowledgeable of the region to have had the chutzpah to say something like that in public on the record, they either are the worst judge of character you could possibly ask for in history, or they knew there was a switch they could throw. There's really no other way around this. Either they didn't have a clue and they were hoping for the best, Or they did have a clue and they weren't fully informed exactly how this would put a person on a fence, and we don't know which side they're going to fall on.
Hank, you said something last hour which was, I think, very important to this discussion, and that was part of the concern is who controls this kind of technology.
Yes, sir. That is the major concern people should be looking at.
You know, here we are worried about, you know, implanted chips in people and whittling away at rights and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
What are the dangers of equipment like this being used in every city in the United States one day by those who want total control?
Well, if someone wanted to be able to put people off to the point where they're open to suggestion, then that is the eventual effect of this type of mechanism. It literally wipes you down and wipes the slate cleaner and cleaner the more you're exposed to it. The longer you're exposed to it, the more open to suggestion you will be. If you have something like that deployed worldwide, wouldn't have to just be here. It could be our allies, it could be our enemies, anybody, anywhere. If you have something of this nature deployed, literally decisions can and will be made on all levels of society, from the person who's sweeping the streets and handing you your fries across the counter all the way to the government that decides whether or not you're going to go to war with somebody else. Those individuals are all susceptible to this. And with the range and power of these things, now that you got to consider also.
And what would you do, though, right now, Hank, and you, William? Would you just wheel them out of Iraq and just simply not use it?
They have actually been retrograded out of theater. They had an event over there. I'm not sure if Will briefed you on that, but they had a salient event that proved to them that under some circumstances they can backfire. And that pretty much tore it for them. They took them out of Iraq and Afghanistan after that.
So where are they now?
They're in Maryland at the Office of Naval Intelligence.
All of them?
That's the last place that I heard of them going.
Well, then you both of you have been successful then because they're not being used.
Well, it wasn't us.
Yes and no. Like I said, it was an interesting event. A place called Al-Qaim, spelled Q-A-I-M, is off to the west of Iraq. It's about 20 nautical miles away from the border with Syria. Al-Qaim is an interesting place for many different reasons. It's an indigenous production facility for the enrichment of uranium that the United States has never talked about publicly. They were capable, since 1984, of producing 5 pounds of yellow cake per day.
Since when?
Since 1984. The CIA has known about this facility since 1984. That's when it was first put into being, and they have enriched U-308, which is yellow cake, uranium hexafluoride. They get the phosphor itself from a mine at Al-Aqashat to the north and east of Al-Qaim, bring it there, and process it. And during the 1990 and 91 Gulf War, it was still up and running during the time frame when we started the bombing campaign all the way up till February 24th.
So are you saying that they indeed did have WMDs?
They did have them, but matter of fact, a document that I just sent to you a little while ago to your other email, that document shows that in 1991, we, the United States, saw the WMDs that we were most concerned about being packed up onto trucks, driven by Iranian civilians back over the border from Iraq to Iran, and then being handed over to the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, which, I might add, never have liked us much. They have those specific WMDs in their hands now, and we're talking by the labels in this Department of Defense document alone, tularemia, anthrax, and yellow cake. They have the computers that were used to control the actual process and also the equipment and knowledge to manufacture more. So, in essence, the Iranians were given all of the material and all of the knowledge that Iraq had gotten from us, the Russians, and worldwide over the past 30 years prior to that. They were given a starter kit for WMDs and then been ignored for the past 15 years to do whatever the heck they wanted with it. And we're today talking about, in big air quotes, worrying about them getting the bomb and enriching uranium. No, sorry. They've had that capability. They are just incrementally admitting to smaller and smaller amounts, heading towards what they actually can do today, as opposed to what we think they can do.
Now, if I could jump in here, please. I have this document and an article called Iran's Big Surprise up on my website today, identifying the trucks, the dates, everything Hank has told you, I can confirm.
Now, if you really want to get to brass tacks on that, the individual who was in charge of our military at that time, and I really want to make sure this is a neutral statement. I don't want people to take this the wrong way, you included, George. But it is a plain fact, and it's part of the document, so it should be part of the discussion. The individual who is listed, matter of fact, that would be line 39 from the very top, including spaces. The individual listed there is the Secretary of Defense. Now, the Secretary of Defense received a copy of this very document, the same one that I emailed to you and the one that Will has on his website. The Secretary of Defense in 1991, when this document was handed to him, was our current Vice President, Dick Cheney.
Okay.
So he was fully and completely informed that the WMDs we were most concerned about, that the United Nations for the next 8 to 10 years went running around inside the desert of Iraq looking for, were no longer to be found. They were in the country to the far right of the one that we were looking in, and I might add on top of this, when those weapons of mass destruction were taken out of Iraq, they were done by Shiite commanders that had had those put under their command by Hussein Kamal, one of the son-in-laws of Saddam Hussein. He was in charge of the nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare program for Saddam Hussein. He wanted to make sure he had somebody in his back pocket if he ever had to go up against his father-in-law. He had a ready-made standing army that had these type of weapons that he could immediately call on, tell them to rise up, take this dictator out, and they would do it. Well, when they realized in 1990 and 91 that that probably wasn't going to happen, and after the fact they were all going to get shot anyway, they decided to contact the Iranians, the Shiites over there, and say, look, we got these really neat things over here that we've been put in charge of. Would you like them? The Iranians obviously said yes. They sent people over the border. Now, you figure, we're in a country occupying it at the time that this is occurring. And they're sending people over the border from Iran to Iraq. They are picking up these weapons of mass destruction and then taking them physically back over the border into Iran to the Pasdaran barracks, which are about 35 kilometers or so.
Okay, but look, what does that have to do with this kind of technology? That's my point. You know, I don't want to get into Iraq. I don't want to argue the merits over who knew what about weapons of mass destruction. It's not part of tonight's program.
Okay. Let's go back to Al-Qaim then, if we can. To pick that story up, we had a group of Army engineers approach Al-Qaim last February with, as I understand, and Hank, you checked me on this, 10 poppers. The idea was to light these things off, step back, let them cook the town for 2 to 3 days, end the resistance. There was quite a lot of resistance in this particular town, and then go in when the town is subdued and with minimal force, hopefully take control of Al-Qaim. Hank, why don't you tell us what happened when they went to calibrate 5 of the 10 poppers outside Al-Qaim, February 06?
Well, the military had the idea, as Will was saying, to use these to more or less make the individuals in Al-Qaim docile to the point where we could go in, minimum bloodshed. Good idea on the face, didn't work out, did not work out. They set up the generators and were going to calibrate 5 of the 10 of these poppers all at the same time so that they could just turn them on and drive them on Humvees and place them outside of the city. All 5 of the ones that they turned on at that time all burned out in the exact same way at the exact same time.
A malfunction of magnitude, huge magnitude.
It's really difficult to see how something like that happened, and to this day I still do not know what exactly happened. And the main reason that this is so unusual is because each one of them was hooked up to their own power source. They were all turned on, you know, same way they had done in the cities. They had turned several of these on in proximity to each other before. So there was either something really strange physically about the region that they were in, or something else was working on them at that time.
But you're saying that all the poppers now have been taken out of Iraq. That's interesting. We'll be back. Another hour goes by very quickly. We'll open up the phone lines, chemtrails, the situation with this mind control technology. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. William, Hank, whoever wants to take this, what can we as individuals do to fight this mind manipulation, this kind of technology here?
That's a good question. That's a really good question.
I would suggest, first of all, if I may, as a journalist for some decades, that I think we'd better be much more concerned, George, with the mind control technology in our own living rooms, kitchens, and bedrooms. I mean this seriously. Television is the biggest mind control brainwashing device on the planet. I've worked in the field for years. We all know its effect and its ability to mold our opinions and thoughts. We do have direct control over that box. We can turn it off, and I think that it would be a worthwhile experiment, at least, to do just that, if we can. It's highly physically addictive, and I mean that again literally. But turn the thing off and see how that feels when we're not bombarded, not only by its information, disinformation, but by the very radiation that jangles our nerves and entrains our brains. That's the biggest mind control device going, and we have control over it.
You agree, Hank?
Yeah, I would have to say that is a definite shot in the right direction. We, as a society, are used to having the ability to turn ourselves off and have other people tell us what to think. Right. We are really, really used to that. And for the Coast to Coast audience, I have to say that fits into a different category. These are individuals who are willing to sit down and listen to a radio as opposed to sitting in front of a television. Radio gives you a totally different mental picture and a totally different way of looking at things. It opens your mind rather than closes it off. Television, it gives you so many inputs visual, auditory. It literally supplants your ability to think.
All right, to the phones we go for what's left of the hour here. East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Yeah, George, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
And Hank and
William.
William Thomas?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, great show tonight. I live in North Jersey, near the New York-New Jersey border, about 30 miles out of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And we have something up here called the Highland Hum.
Yes.
Okay. You can hear this. Sometimes it feels like it comes up through the ground. Sometimes it feels like, you know, it's coming from above you. And we have Picatinny Arsenal, which is a major U.S. Army military research station.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they built this big gantry on one of the ridges. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And now it's even louder than it's ever been. And if you draw a line through this ridge and valley system here,
mm-hmm.
it lines up with West Point, and it lines up with Washington, D.C., where all the military bases are down there, and it lines up with Portland, which I think there's a sub-base up there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if you go over to the next major ridge and valley system over in Pensy, in the Poconos and the Catskills,
mm-hmm.
you don't hear this anymore.
Nope.
It drives the dogs crazy.
I'm familiar with what you're talking about.
Yeah, in the woods, sometimes the birds are just yakking and chirping all the time. Other times, it's dead quiet.
Mm-hmm.
It's louder near large bodies of water.
Mm-hmm.
We have a couple major 9 Mile lakes, the Wanakee Reservoir and Greenwood Lake. And it's louder by the major bodies of water.
I'm familiar with what you're talking about. I can't get into some aspects of it because it is still considered classified, but I can say this. The noise that you're hearing is essentially land-based communication talking to submarines in deep, deep water. And if you really want to get into that, look up the FOSSIF, F-O-S-I-F, and the SOSUS, S-O-S-U-S. Those two things will pretty much give you an idea of what you're dealing with. And I am familiar with that. I've been in Fort Dix and that area, and, yeah, I've had that experience too.
And a lot of people are hearing these strange low hums.
Yes, some people call it the Taos hum.
Mm-hmm.
We have it here in Canada. In Victoria, people have complained. This is ELF, or extreme low frequency. Hank is correct. This is to talk to submarines. A major controversy some years back, some of you listeners may recall, in Michigan when they attempted to build a big facility there, the public outcry forced that to be put on hold, at least for a time. But, yeah, I get reports of this quite regularly.
Okay, next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Hi, my name is Beth. I'm from Salem, Oregon.
Hi, Beth. Go.
Hi, just down from Portland. I agree with what Will was saying with the swath after swath of, and that's you guys. I'm so glad. God bless all three of you. The Portland area, the Salem area, we've just been a killer of the chemicals and whatever it is in the air.
What are you saying? I can't hear you.
I'm sorry. I have tonsillitis. I've been deathly sick because I believe when I was in Phoenix a couple years ago, it was. The chemtrails were very heavy. I don't know if they still are over there. And I, of course, have no insurance or all that good stuff, so that's besides the point. But when they just keep poisoning us, what can we do to get more people to know about this and believe, you know, what is really going on up in the air?
And how many people believe this, William? How many people believe in chemtrails or simply say, come on, that's not happening?
I think more and more people are at least wondering what's going on in the skies because they haven't seen this before. I'm with people, and they pointed out to me, they've never heard of chemtrails, but they know this is unusual. We can't put a number on it, but quite a few people. It's the media that's in our face on this denial issue here. They won't even look up. They won't even run the film that they make, with one exception in Memphis, Tennessee. Phoenix is and has been a hotbed of chemtrails. we can defend ourselves and our families by boosting our immune system, taking care of ourselves with exercise and diet and vitamin supplements, things like that. But as far as getting the media concerned, I recommended in Victoria last week, you know, somebody stood up and said, I think I'm going to wear a mask down on the street corner. And I said, well, if you wear a gas mask downtown in a major city, and don't go alone, go with 10 of your pals, and don't carry any signs, don't talk about chemtrails, just show up wearing masks. People are going to start asking you, what in the world are you doing? And then you can point up to those trails. I think maybe street theater could be one answer.
Next up, first-time caller line, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Lisa, and I'm calling from California.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I just wanted to bring up the fact that, if you guys remember, right after 9/11, all flights were grounded.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Immediately.
And what?
Almost immediately.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I'm 37 years old, and I remember when I was really young, the skies just always being really clear.
Mm.
Well, I don't remember that for a long, long, long time. Well, I remember right after 9/11 looking up and just going, wow, the sky is so blue and so clear. And just being and feeling really, I mean, sad about what happened, of course, but I felt really good and really clear-minded. And then after that, you know, again, I live by the beach, so we get a natural marine layer anyway. But it was just, it hasn't been the same.
Lisa.
And I'm forgetful.
Go ahead, Bill.
And just forgetful. I'm always forgetting things. And it's like I listen to your show, but it's almost like I'm in this lethargic, oh, well, kind of go with the flow and don't, like, I'm not resistance. I don't know how to explain it exactly or put words to it, but I guess it's the mind control thing.
Well, William, you know, a lot of people think this.
They certainly do, and there may be some interaction. Now, this is aluminum oxide we're finding in the lab test, not aluminum, not particularly linked to Alzheimer's. My suspicion here, and it's backed up by Joseph Paleo, a naturopath in Idaho, and another MD I met just Friday in Victoria, seen a lot of patients with these complaints. And when these patients are tested, Lisa, we're finding fungal infections in about 97% of them. As an alternative health writer for some years, I'm convinced that the fungal infection is behind many of these feelings of lethargy, inability to concentrate, focus, make two sentences meet up. The kind of thing that you're describing, we can deal with this by a simple matter of taking cayenne pepper. I do this every day. It warms our blood temperature, and it burns out the fungus if it's there. It also helps our heart, so it's a good thing in any way. You'll know if you have a chemtrail-related ailment if your blood temperature drops. If you feel lousy and it rises, you probably have the flu. But if your blood temperature actually goes down, you most definitely have a fungal infection. And by taking cayenne pepper and making sure that your blood is alkaline and not acidic, most of us drink the coffee, eat the sweets, all those fun foods make our blood acidic and the fungus goes rampant. When we go alkaline and eat the vegetables that our mother told us to eat and drink water with lemon and alkaline our blood, again, we drive out the fungal infection. I think you'll find your concentration and memory improving.
What does HARP have to do with any of this possibilities, tying in with chemtrails?
Oh, boy.
Well, one of the scientists, in fact, both scientists at Wright-Patterson working on chemtrails, they both named HARP. And they both said the barium component to chemtrails, which we have found here in Canada in lab tests, act as a conductor to send this energy over the horizon. We also have something, George, called the Gwen system put in place across the United States in the 1980s and supposedly, underline that, decommissioned after great public outcry in 1999. You have hundreds of these towers all talking to each other, all capable of putting out frequencies that would reach literally every living creature in the United States. Now, I've just read last night,
speculation, underlying speculation, that HARP could actually be somehow tied into Gwen and radiate frequencies throughout the public to, quote, dumb down people, make them lethargic, the basic symptoms Hank described in Iraq. I don't know if this is happening. We need people with sophisticated meters to go out there and take some readings. But the Gwen Towers exist. HARP is radiating at very high power levels as we speak. And the bottom line here is whether this is intentional and sinister or not, these frequencies, as we've been saying all night, interfere with our thinking processes, interfere with migrating animals, mess up our bodies and brains so that we can't think straight and make rational decisions and look critically at the decisions our government has made.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello. Hi, my name is Rich from Santa Cruz.
Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm very curious about this because probably about 8 months ago, I was driving over the Golden Gate Bridge, and my face started to get hot. And I was quite curious on what that was and actually had no idea. And probably about 2 weeks after that, where I was living in Santa Cruz, all different times of the day, my face would get hot, and I had no idea what this was. And after Will had started speaking about this, I got quite curious on what was going on. I believe that I was hit with this. Will, do you understand what I'm talking about and what that might be?
I am not sure what it could be. It could be a number of things, but the facial heating would be indicative of electromagnetics. Again, it could be a local, could be from transmitters in your area, but you say you're a resident there and you've never experienced this before. You also mentioned the Golden Gate Bridge, so perhaps this was some kind of experiment. Very hard to pin this kind of thing down, but I can say not a good sign. Not a good sign when your skin is heating up, because these effects on our brains and bodies we've been talking about take place at frequencies and levels of wattage far lower than would be used to heat up skin. So by the time you have that symptom, your brain has been under some kind of duress for quite some time. That's a drastic symptom you're describing.
Mm-hmm. East of the Rockies, your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George. It's Brooke from Newport, Rhode Island.
Brooke. Hi.
I'm calling to make a couple points about the chemtrail phenomena as well as the ELF.
Sure.
One of the points is I met a lady recently who is in her 50s and worked at a government installation in South County, Rhode Island. And everyone in her installation heard this hum, and everyone got sick, and she quit after 2 weeks of working there. That is one. The other point is I have heard this phenomena in four states now, Vermont and New Hampshire, which are not near any large bodies of water, and Boston and Rhode Island, which are near large bodies of water. So I would like to hear the comment from your guest on that.
Which one wants that?
I'll go
Hank,
first.
Help me out.
All right.
As far as inland goes, one thing that you do need to take into account, a lot of the transmitters and the transponders, I should call them, that are transmitting and receiving to the submarines underseas, they actually do have a lot of them that are more inland. I mean, you don't have to be out on the edge of the coast or actually sticking it in the water or anything like that. They can actually use the landmass itself as a transducer in order to get this from wherever they're transmitting out into the water, which unfortunately also means that you're going to have that low hum and almost like a sensation you get prior to an earthquake, that real low hum. It feels like the air is vibrating around you and muffling sound, but you can't really identify where it's coming from or tell how to get away from it or anything like that. So you will experience that inland as well.
Do you think, some people have said that they think that we may be building huge underground caverns, getting ready for, you know, the big problem. Is that possible? Is that where that sound comes from?
We have been doing a lot of, let's call it exploration, I think is the best word that the USGS, the Geological Society, usually uses in this. But as far as the large cavern areas go, believe it or not, out in the west area Probably the eastern side of Nevada is usually going to be the best place for that. They're trying to put a lot of facilities just like SAC was. In other words, they find a mountain, they bore underneath it, they put storage facilities and actual military installations underneath those, and that's countrywide. So, yeah, that is a definite possibility as well.
So something's going on.
Pretty much.
William, how do people get a hold of you if they want to email you? Of course, your website, willthomas.net. Hank, of course, you're anonymous. They don't want to find you, right?
Well, I'm sure a lot of people would like to, and if you would like to have either me or Will back or keep in contact with us, well, you know, forward things to us, you can get in touch with me through Will.
All right.
That's right. I'll forward information on. People can reach me by email. I'm sure many are through my website, or try willt@willthomas.net. And by the way, folks, you can come down to ConspiracyCon, if I can throw this in, because I'll be speaking in Santa Clara, California at the Hyatt Regency May 27th and 28th. Check out the website, conspiracycon.com, and you can get in touch with me in person.
All right, stay with us. We'll be back. Final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Hank, understand that we've got a lot of GIs listening to the program in Iraq.
Yes, sir. As a matter of fact, we do. The time frame that you're talking about is when you guys are on the air over there. We have a lot of downtime for those folks, if you want to call it downtime. So they're sitting around the radio right about now listening to what we have to say about them, and I would imagine getting a little worried.
Well, they must be picking it. How are they picking us up out there, for crying out loud?
Well, a majority of the radios that you buy in Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran, pretty much anywhere in that part of the world, have a AM, FM, and shortwave capability. So they can pick it up on pretty much any one of the radios that they have over there.
That's one heck of a signal.
Yes, it is.
East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George. Your guests are still there? I thought that they had left, but if they're still there, that's great.
Yeah, they're still with us.
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, to get right to the point is, I'm not buying it, okay? First of all, they were talking about the diver that was up under the water, okay, and how he died. Okay, they knew the depth that he was at. They knew his heart froze up. They knew all that. What is his name? Can any of you guys tell me what his name is?
Do not have the name to release. No.
Okay, that's one thing. Second of all, you have to have extremely high clearances, or you're the best counter espionage people on planet Earth. Number three, if they had the capability of any kind of mind control, they would have used it during the riot. And the other thing about the outsider guy, you're talking about how his negotiating tactics would change back and forth. If that's the case, half of the Congress is being shot with the thing. You know, people change their mind all the time. And if they had the capability of doing that, they don't want to change his mind. If they had any kind of control over him or Bin Laden or anything, they would control them. They would control them to the point to get them out in the open and blow their brains out. That's all it would be with that. And the other point is that you know, this, it's really frustrating when you hear stuff like this. And then the other guy said something about it being a war crime. How in the world can you say something like a war crime when they had 40 people get blowed up in Iraq today? You know, that's what just blows my mind. You know, you'll say some abstract thing, and then the first thing you want to do is blame the United States on something, and these people over there cutting people's heads off and killing people every day, and you don't say nothing about that. And the other thing is, if you know, I believe there's a grain of truth to what you say, okay? There's a grain of truth in a whole bucket full of crap.
Well, if you guys want to react to that, you can. If not, I'll take another call.
Sure. Well, I'll start out by agreeing with the caller, actually, and saying we're not really speaking mind control in that we are speaking of devices that can get people to do specific things, whether it's buy Coca-Cola or buy a war. We're talking about mind manipulation in that we're speaking of technology, and this information comes from people on the ground dealing with the technology. So forget espionage. This is grunt-level information,
mm-hmm.
A technology that scrambles brains, scrambles people's ability to think, whether it's Iraqi civilians or American soldiers in a very tough combat zone. having their reactions eroded. And again, I agree with the caller. Blowing up children and innocent civilians with suicide bombs is terrorism. I don't care what uniform a person is wearing. I don't care what ideology they use to justify what they're doing. Terrorism is the killing of innocents for no reason whatsoever. And I agree, that's terrible what the suicide bombers are doing in Iraq.
First, go ahead, William. Is that you?
No, that's me, Hank.
Okay.
One thing that I would say to the individual that just called, I can understand his frustration. I can understand his anger about the entire situation, not just what we're saying. But the bottom line here is the information that we're getting is coming directly from the front lines. And you got to remember, in Iraq right now, Iraq is a front line. There is no rear echelon. There is no rear area. The green zone gets peppered on a regular basis, and that's supposedly the most secure area that we have. So there really isn't any secure area, downtime, rear zone, whatever. Now, as far as where the information is coming from, how it's getting here, as I said earlier, if you'd been listening, this is information that's been built over a long period of time. We're talking several years. So it isn't something a person just tripped over and saw the name tag on the side, you know, a secret experimental piece of machinery, please don't talk about or something. That isn't what this is. And as far as clearances go, I had more than an adequate clearance to be able to see things that the typical battalion commander was not allowed to see. So I'm not sure if that makes any headway with him, but the other aspect of this, too, is MKUltra, MKNaomi, the acknowledged mind control programs that the CIA and the Department of Defense, all those individuals had part of. This is part of history. This is part of the record. They have gone on record as admitting these did occur. So we're talking everything from putting LSD into people's drinking water and then sitting back and watching what they do, individuals jumping out of windows, their widows coming back and saying, excuse me, but my husband just killed himself while he was under your care. What did you do to him? And they blew this person off for decades lying. So the very idea that this is an acknowledged fact and something that has gone on and is on the record as having occurred, it really isn't that much of a leap of faith to believe that somebody, if they had the equipment to do this, would be doing it.
And again, you say that the 20 of the poppers that were used are gone now. They've been taken out, right?
They have physically been removed from the area over there and brought back here to the United States. Now, that can be a bit misleading. The individuals brought them out of country based on the fact that they ran into something they had not anticipated occurring, i.e. what happened at Al-Qaim when all five of them burned out at once, and that in and of itself may have just been a temporary setback for them. So far, I have not heard of them being put back out into the public arena, having been used one way or the other. Those were only the 25 that I personally knew existed.
All right, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Joy, and I'm from Portland, Oregon.
Go ahead, Joy.
And hi, I've heard The Hum for over 10 years, and it does have musical overtones to it and harmonics, but it's not in tune with each other. No, the tunes are not in tune, and I just want the government to fine-tune it so it doesn't drive me crazy anymore.
Good luck on that, really.
Yeah, the only place I cannot hear it is if I'm in a movie theater and they have the movie on really, really loud, then it just distracts me so I don't hear it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to sleep at night. But I don't know how to unite with other people who hear this hum so we could find a senator or somebody to champion for us to have them fine-tune it so it doesn't drive us crazy.
Well, one of the
I don't know what to do.
Well, there really isn't a whole lot that we can do, and I hate to sound like a downer on this, but the military is using this for their own machinations. The government typically is either told something that is to the level of their security clearance, or they're informed that the Department of Defense has a handle on it and they'll get back to them. Typically, you don't find someone who is able to look into this, a senator or a representative, that has a high enough security clearance to actually know what is going on. But once you get to that tipping point where you do have enough clearance to know what's going on, you're also under the heading of, okay, now I can't release the information.
Why didn't we get any reports from the media out there that something like this was being used?
Well, they have heard that some of these things were going on, but typically the media that were deployed in Afghanistan and Iraq, now I assume that's where you're talking about, right?
Yes.
Okay. The media that are in that area either were exposed to exactly what was going on at the time as well as everybody else. There really is no immunity to this. You know, they're in the middle of things with everybody else. Well, they're affected too. And the people that are on the ground that are with the media either don't know about it and can't account for what's going on and just throw their hands up in the air, or they are complicit with it and they're not going to release the information and explain why did this mob suddenly show up out of nowhere, carry on cranky, go away for a little while, and then suddenly they're throwing roses at us the next day. The unpredictability is something that really hasn't been looked into. And I agree with you. It's very frustrating because the so-called mainstream media that's on the ground over there, they're seeing these events happening right in front of them, but they cannot account for them. And when they do ask questions, they're more or less blown off.
West of the Rockies, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there. This is Olin in Culver City, California.
Yes, sir.
William Thomas was talking about acoustic vibrations in seawater that disrupted whales, porpoises, and divers. Have you heard of vibrating the floor where a person lives or works with a 5 or 6 cycle quiver on top of humming and buzzing to induce nervous tingling and distraction leading to a nervous breakdown?
Ooh, I'm not sure if the word inducer, I'd like to hear more of motivation and whether any equipment in a building or nearby buildings could account for it. It's the motive that I'd like to hear a bit more of.
Well, as far as the frequency and everything, how exactly do you know what the frequency of this is? Has it been measured?
I don't know if he's there anymore.
I think lost our gentleman.
Well, at the
he
at
asked
the lower...
his question and ran.
Yeah, well, to try and approach that question, the lower the frequency, the more you're going to get the floor shaking, the rumbling, things of that nature. If it happens over a longer period of time, then it will cause disorientation of pretty much everything that you have going on in a human. The other thing I would definitely have to ask is, if that's the detectable vibration, is it possible that there are ultra-low sounds that are going on that they don't detect that are having an even more dramatic effect on them? Because the lower vibrations that are typically undetected, or undetectable, I should say, those are the ones that account for more disorientation.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yes. Hello, George.
Yeah.
Hi. My name's Susan. My question is, I think, probably better to Hank.
Okay.
And it's about non-lethal weapons.
Yes.
And in another state where I used to live, I encountered a really blinding, brilliant light that was up above me, and it only lasted for probably about 10 seconds, but after that, I had physical problems. And my question is, do you know of any brilliant light of some type that is used as a non-lethal weapon?
Yes, the military has had that ever since about, if I remember correctly, about 1974. They've nicknamed them dazzlers, and there's a lot of bad names for them. But essentially, it takes advantage of a, well, not too recently discovered, but recently discovered problem that people have with approximately 3 cycles per second light. There are a lot of kids that play video games that will go into epileptic seizures and things like that. They've experienced it more overseas in Japan and China and those areas than they have here in the U.S. But typically, if you dazzle somebody with either a bright white light or something that has a slight tinge of red in the frequency to it, and you alter it at a 3 hertz or 3 pulses per second rate, you tend to turn off the person for a short period of time. That's about the best way to put it.
Have you heard of cases where people are being microwaved by their neighbors?
There are some instances where people can gain access to the equipment to be able to do that, yes.
I think Roger Tulsis, one of our investigator guests, was on, and he was talking about a case like that.
Mm-hmm.
Where they just aimed microwaves at people, and they got sick, violently sick.
Yes, sir. It literally will affect the nervous system of the human body. It will interfere with your body's ability to process the electricity that it uses just to survive and operate. And your nerve impulses for thought as well as activity go along the same lines. And as soon as you start interrupting that, you start turning into literally somebody who cannot control their actions. Nausea, short and long-term memory loss, tingling of the extremities, feeling like you're about to pass out, getting giddy, all those effects can occur within the first half second of being exposed to something like this.
All right, next up, Wild Card Line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George.
Yeah.
This is Andreas in Ohio.
Hi, Andreas. Go ahead, sir.
I was wondering about cell phones and cell phone towers possibly being used to control people's emotions, affect people's emotions with low frequencies. And I was also wondering if Hank could say something about chemical genocide in Iraq.
Okay. George, do you want to go into that?
No, not yet, but go ahead. Answer his question.
I'll jump in here, if I may.
Yeah, you are the cell
phone. The previous response Hank gave was outstanding concerning microwaves. I was going to jump in at that point and point out it doesn't have to be a weapon. The caller is right on. A cell phone relay tower, as you and I discussed, George, in our last conversation on air, can have similar effects if you live within 100 or 200 meters of this tower. Again, I have to emphasize, it does not have to be deliberate. I do not want people coming away from the show thinking they're being mind-controlled by cell phone towers or even Gwen towers. I would appreciate if people would consider that their brains, their ability to think, concentrate, as well as the physical symptoms of nausea, dizziness, et cetera, that Hank just described, could be very well affecting them and their children from near proximity to microwave towers. It does not have to be deliberate. And, again, it doesn't have to be mind control if it just scrambles your thinking processes.
I'll let you both wrap up because we're only got a couple minutes left. Hank, how about you? Anything you want to say?
I guess what I'd really like to get across to the listeners, and you too, George, is that we have people who are in control of a lot of different types of mechanisms we either don't know about, don't understand yet, that sort of thing. They can field them wherever they want to, and places like Iraq, Afghanistan, and the upcoming combat that it looks like we're going to have with the Iranians, these are areas where these people are left to their own machinations. They can do what they want with whomever they want, and who's going to stop them or tell on them. That's pretty much where we're at right now.
How about you, William?
Yes, I think it behooves us, no matter where we stand on these issues tonight, to question the rationale and reasons we're being given. Look at how they have held up in the recent past, these arguments, and really question whether we want to be responsible for civilian casualties, one, and bringing our children into such a world. We have to take control of our lives and our destiny, get our country and constitution back.
And again, if somebody wants to see you at an expo conference, what do they do, William?
Yes, well, they can check me out at the Conspiracy Con Conference, Hyatt Regency, Santa Clara, California. I'll be there over the weekend of May 27th, 28th. I'll have a table there. I'll be speaking. Be happy to talk to any of our listeners tonight on any of the issues we've touched on, not only tonight, but during my other appearances on Coast to Coast. And again, thank you very much for this opportunity.
Okay, thank you, William. Hank, thank you as well.
I appreciate what you do, George. You are the man.
Well, we'll give it the best shot we can. I appreciate it. And stay anonymous, Hank.
Always, if you need us back, get in touch with Will. I cover a large amount of territory, sir.
Okay, very good. Thanks to both of you. For Karis Coburn, Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ian Punnett, Ross Mitchell, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.